Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of F This Movie, the overrated podcast that murders in the name of religion. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I am joined after a long absence in which he left the contiguous United States.
Well, it's where the best rehab was.
Welcome back, Doug.
Alaska. Thank you very much. I'm Doug. I'm very happy to be back on the podcasting airwaves, talking to you, Dawn Bailey Hunt, talking to you, John Petrilla, and et cetera, et al. And Patrick, of course, talking to you.
Of course,
face-to-face.
Me.
Like,
face to face. Computer to, we're like, more like Mac to Mac.
That wasn't a punk band from the 90s, though, and therefore I refuse to acknowledge Mac to Mac.
Good
Mac
point.
And me, that's a different story. Let's talk about Mac and me. That's Let's talk about batteries not included.
Mac and me, this is maybe the second podcast in out of three in which Mac and me has come up. So you're listening to F This Movie. It's a podcast that you can find in the iTunes store or online at fthismovie.blogspot.com, where you can find not just our podcast, but lots of reviews and columns and watching trailers with Doug's.
Wow, that's me. I'm the eponymous Doug. I'm
here
right now talking
and
to you.
Shitting on the classics with JB. Oh. There's all kinds of stuff to read there, so go to our site, fthismovie.blogspot.com.
JB's column is well written and very interesting, and it has opened my eyes to a lot of cool things, I admit.
Now you love Dead Poets Society because you are misreading the column, my man.
What? I thought it was all about this is a classic and we should take a shit because it's so good. Like, where shit is coming out of our butts because it's like, oh my God, I can't contain shit in my body when this is like there's such good film out there. I don't know. There's also lists on the website too.
Yeah,
lists
there
are always fun. People love
lists. Yeah, you know who loves lists? Joe Dante. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fthismovie, on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie, and is that everything? DVD Verdict at dvdverdictpresents.com. And I think that's all the ways to find us.
Are we on Google Plus yet? Is Google Plus something that's happening?
Google Chrome, I think we're on.
Google Cloud.
We're in the SoundCloud, where you can hear Smokey and Casper, who composed the F This Movie theme that you get to hear twice every show.
It's a great theme song, better than most theme songs, I would argue.
Agreed.
And, I'd fight any person
you
who
win that argument. You won that argument already.
I'm just saying, if you disagree with me, it's Fist City right now. You and me, Fist City.
Doug, have you seen any Alaska movies lately?
Wait, did you say how they can email you?
I don't know if that's... Oh, you're right. fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. I forgot to mention that. Thank you.
Not a big deal. Because
so glad you're on the show.
I don't get those emails, so it's like, I don't really care.
I mostly keep them away from everybody.
It's you're very kind of like close to the chest, close to the vest.
Mm-hmm. I wear a vest, and then I hold things close to that vest.
I was out of the country.
Nope.
And by out of the country, I mean in Alaska. That's not the country, right? I call that Seward's Folly. That's not even part of what I grew up understanding as my country, tis of thee. I was away for a week, and it was great. I took a vacation with my wife and her family. What? Awkward in-laws, please. And we had a great time. We were in Seattle and Juneau and where else? We went to Victoria, British Columbia. It's a really pretty town. I did see, actually, it's funny. I saw one movie. One day we were at sea.
In Alaska? Did it have subtitles?
It was Juneau. And there was no sub. No, we actually, I saw a movie on the boat. It was a cruise. That's right. I'm old. That's what people, when they're in their 60s, they do. I'm retired. I figure now's the time to take a cruise.
So now when you watch like the movie Out to Sea, do you understand the references?
I don't even know if I know the movie Out to Sea.
Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon. Come on. The Odd Couple reunion no one was waiting for.
And apparently no one saw.
What about Boat Trip? Do you get the references in Boat Trip?
Is that the Cuba, not yeah, Cuba, is that right. The Cuba Gooding Jr.?
Yes.
Movie?
He goes on
I'm more familiar
cruise.
With Snow Dogs. Isn't he in Snow Dogs?
He is in Snow Dogs.
And Men of Honor, with a U, because I saw it in Canada, so it's Men of Honor. No, I saw it was funny because one day at sea, it was kind of like, well, there's not too much to do on the boat. We're kind of bored with the food because everywhere you look, it's food. And they literally force feed you butter if you like don't protect yourself. There's like a Redbox-esque situation on the boat where you could rent out DVDs. So we actually checked out Dewey Cox, Walk Hard, which I had never seen before. But I heard good things about from, now that I think of it, probably from those who I don't respect. Like my nephew, who is a great kid. He's really good at basketball, very tall. but his movie taste is all Tokyo Drift this and Dewey Cox that.
You did not like Walk Hard?
I was very bored by. I think I laughed twice. I did, and maybe to see it on like a 13-inch cruise TV on a rocking swing. It's like, if this boat's a rocking, I'm obviously watching Walk Hard. So don't knock on my door. I'm knocking.
Maybe you were jealous of all the walking hard they were doing. You could do no walking hard. You were out to sea with Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau.
It wasn't bad. I get all the jokes and I've seen all the movies. It's kind of like the Ray and Walk the Line, all that stuff. And I do love me some John C. Reilly, as I think every American, true-blooded American does. But it was just kind of like, I was almost expecting just a lot more, like to be just really hilarious. And it was kind of like, it was kind of funny.
There's like three or four scenes that I think are so hilarious. It's uneven. Like the scene with John Michael Higgins when they're first in the recording studio, when he's telling him like, you're nothing, you're no good. I almost cried during that scene. I was laughing so hard. And the Tim Meadows, you don't want this drug, like that whole run, I thought was really, really funny.
Yeah, it was all good.
It's not addictive.
I liked Kristen Wiig's bit too, where you'll never make it, even though he's a huge famous celebrity. Right. Like, you'll never make it. Give up. It was fine. It was good. I liked it. I just didn't, I was kind of like wanting it to be the funniest movie because, again, I'm stuck on a boat and I've heard good things about it. I'm like, please be funnier. And it's like, it was good. It was fine. I laughed twice.
Did you see anything else once you got
on
once
land?
You,
on land?
Once you lost your sea legs? Is that a thing? Like, you get your sea legs. Do you then lose them?
I think so. And it was all like, land ho, let's go to the AMC. Land ho. That's what they say. They point to an AMC and they go, land ho. That's, I don't know. We saw.
They're actually saying Lando.
Lando. Okay. We saw, my wife and I, on Friday, we saw Midnight in Paris, the Woody Allen movie, which I don't know if JB's talked about it on a podcast because I know he's a fan.
He has, yes.
I did not listen to that specific podcast that he had mentioned that on. It was great. It was a lot of fun. It was charming. It was very adorable. I want to take that movie and put it in my pocket. It was so cute. I'm not even not a Woody Allen fan. I just don't know. I've seen all Woody Allen's, I guess, biggest or most successful popular movies, but I'm not.
So you've seen Curse of the Jade Scorpion, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I know some douchey people from high school that were just, upset, like, Woody Allen is just the best. And just like, and that's always weirdly turns me off. And I don't know. So then, of course, like in my own head, because I'm neurotic and crazy, I'm like, well, I probably shouldn't see this great director's work. And he is. He's like a really... Well, it's, like a established great director, and he's made a lot of great stuff. And but I'm just not as familiar, and it's only my ignorance and kind of indifference towards this stuff. But I saw this, and it was I really, really liked it. It was just a lot of fun. I was smiling through the entire thing. It's really short and quick and clever, and nothing about it is bad. So I actually went on my honeymoon, too, with my wife. We went to Paris over a year ago, and it was just nice to see that town, and it's just a charming.
It was like going back.
It was like going only at about like 11:30. So
I the first 10 minutes, though, where you get to see an entire day turn to midnight in Paris in real time.
Did you actually see it? Did you?
I did.
Did you like it?
I liked it. I had some problems with it, with just sort of the I guess third act, which is what everybody says. I have some third act problems, and with Rachel McAdams' character, even though I like Rachel McAdams, but. Her character was tough to take, and I liked it, and I'm glad that it's out during the summer, and I'm really glad that it's doing well. Yeah, it's actually like his most successful movie ever. It's made like $30 million or more, which is unheard of for a while.
That's because of that's the Butterscotch Stallion right there.
You cast the
Butterscotch Stallion, you're going to make $30 million.
Unless he is the voice of a Marmaduke, people are going to go see that movie. My issue, and this is a theme that I think is going to come up a lot tonight, my issue with Midnight in Paris isn't so much the movie, which I enjoyed. It's the sort of reaction to the movie. I have found that there are some people in this world, critics and otherwise, who I think are trying to oversell how much they loved Midnight in Paris because... they believe that it sort of proves them to be more intellectual than the common person. Do you know what I'm saying? And I don't want to say exactly why, because there's things that happen in the movie that aren't advertised, and I don't want to give that away. but sort of the main plot device of the movie, I think people are patting themselves on the back for like, I know who that is. I get what they're talking about. But like, yeah, most of us who went to school do.
Right.
But I think people are really overly pleased with themselves for liking that movie. But that's a stupid reaction. That's not the movie's fault.
But, you know, what's funny about that, too, is how do I talk about this without talking about it? a lot of those kind of references, and
yes,
when they make reference to literature or to film or photography or whatever, painting, I probably didn't, you know, maybe got 75% of all the references. The other 25%, what was so interesting is like, I don't necessarily get it, but you get it because obviously right, it's not like, you know, it's not the hardest thing to understand that there's like they're referencing something and the point is more so the reference rather than like the actual thing that they're, you know what I'm saying? Like
Yeah.
The reference is what's more important, but I completely agree. And it's like, I saw this in a theater with, the theater I go to that's close to my house is, some older people and they've got, it's a, I guess more wealthy, suburb of Chicago. And it was a lot of older people, a lot of people that like came in late and they were like trying to find their seat. It was very annoying. It was very like, just, you know what, it starts on, it wasn't even on time. I mean, like obviously the advertised time is,
right,
it's going to be 20 minutes later, but you're coming in like 45 minutes later and you're finding your seat, whatever. But they were laughing at everything and they could just tell they're like, oh, this is
right,
made for me.
Right.
I'm like, just because you were born in the, you know, I can't, I shouldn't say too much about men, but I did, I just did, I found it very charming and just, just the message of like art and kind of,
It's about things that a lot of movies aren't about, particularly, during the summer. So
right,
that should be applauded. I take issue with
some
of the douchey response, and douchey response will be a common theme in tonight's episode.
I thought the movie Midnight in Paris, though, it could have used a little more, and this is maybe where my biggest beef with Midnight, it could have used a little more Megatron is my major issue. Not enough Megatron, a little bit of Megatron.
Yeah, more like Minortron, you know? And I'm like, come on, guys.
Is Megatron even on this in the Seine? Is that's the river in Paris, or the Seine? Okay, so make sure. Why is he in the Seine? What's he on the Eiffel Tower? Why is he blowing up the Eiffel? But not enough blowing up of the Eiffel Tower.
Agreed.
I thought the Nazis did a better job myself, but
and Cobra also, right? In you haven't seen G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra, have you?
I've seen a lot of it.
There's a weird like green nanite technology thing that like chews up the Eiffel Tower and destroys it. But
oh, I did not see that sequence.
Yeah.
But man, now I gotta, because
yeah, now you probably should.
I'm a huge Francophile. I got to see everything, all things Paris related. That's
Have you heard of this movie called American Werewolf in Paris? Because it's so good.
Have you seen French Kiss?
Ooh, it sounds delightful.
It sounds delicious.
Anything else besides Midnight in Paris and Walk Hard?
I've seen a bunch of small like stuff on TV and I saw. I think you lent me. What's the movie? I Know Who Killed Me is what you lent me. I believe it's the Korean movie. I'm kidding. It's called I Saw the Devil, which for whatever reason, I always call I Know Who Killed Me that horrible.
Maybe because of your obsession with Dakota Moss.
Wait, Dakota Moss? You mean I forgot her
real Aubrey other... something maybe?
No, which I actually never even saw. I know Who Killed Me, but it's that, I assume, horrible Lindsay Lohan movie. And this is not a horrible movie. It's the Korean kind of revenge thriller torture porn, and it was very interesting. It was kind of like very gruesome. Obviously it's not rated, it's very, you know, I didn't have the same response to it that you did, and mm-hmm. I think that even JB's son, I remember hearing him talk about it and just how he loved it, and just it took him places he never thought he'd go. And I don't know if JB had the same reaction to it too, but I really enjoyed it, but I kind of get turned off to some of the gruesomeness, which I know is the point. But it still just doesn't detract from the fact, or it doesn't mean I still don't get turned off by it, I guess.
Yeah, right,
I don't know if
right.
it makes sense at all now, it was good.
All right.
In that I was disgusted by it. Anyway, what have you seen?
I've seen some stuff. I've seen some stuff. This weekend,
you gotta write this stuff down and post this below the podcast, right?
Yeah. That's a new thing that we do. What have I seen? I saw Zookeeper. I won't get into that.
Kidding?
No, well, I had to for another job.
Wait,
I have to review
podcast?
It for another. No, not another podcast.
Another my, F this movie.
My
went?
Day job. I
F
have to
that
review
movie?
Zookeeper, and then I also saw the new John Carpenter movie, The Ward.
Real quick, does your day job have to do with zoos or keeping anything?
No, I run a Kevin James fan site. I didn't want to say it, but you forced my hand. I saw The Ward, the new John Carpenter movie. Shockingly terrible. And is another one of those movies that raises the question, like, what happens to directors? Because not only is he not doing a movie that's as good as his earlier great stuff, you can't believe this person ever directed a good movie. And it would, I would almost say it's worth seeing the same way that, like, The Happening is worth seeing, but it's so boring in so many spots that I would say don't. I saw Horrible Bosses.
How was that?
Better than I expected. I mean, the trailers were kind of like, eh, I like the people involved, but...
Is it better than Hall Pass?
It's considerably better than Hall Pass, yes. I thought Hall Pass was horrible. I liked Hall Pass.
So awful. So. Yeah.
It's not a perfect comedy, but it was better than I expected it to be, and I laughed a lot. I found myself being the only person laughing a lot of the times. Okay. So.
Was it a full theater, or was it just because...
No, it was about half full. I mean...
Because if you're the only person laughing and it's in your living room, that makes sense.
Well... The ghosts sometimes laugh, but only at stuff that's funny to ghosts.
They're like, boo, ha, ha, ha.
And I it's confusing. That's a mixed message to me.
Right. They're only laughing at Ghost Dad, though, and that's like, well, that's obvious.
The movie that I really want to talk about that I saw, sort of in preparation for this podcast, but not exactly. I thought, well, we're going to talk about a bad movie that has this cult around it. Let me find another bad movie that has this cult of adoration around it. So on Netflix Instant, I watched Repo, the Genetic Opera.
Okay, I heard about this. I don't really know too much about it. It came out a couple years ago, right?
Yes. It didn't really, I mean, it played a few midnight shows. It never got like really a wide theatrical release. It is directed by Darren Lynn Bousman, who did Saw 2, 3, and 4.
Okay.
And nothing else. He's got two movies right now sort of in the can.
Those are probably the sawiest Saw movies, though, right? I mean,
yeah. It stars the girl from Spy Kids and Paul Sorvino and Paris Hilton. It's crazy, and it's based on like this stage show that I think they used to put on in L.A. And I get why certain people are drawn to it or why they sort of like it. I mean, it's like I won't compare it to Rocky Horror Picture Show, obviously. But it's like that sort of out there thing. It's entirely a musical. There's no dialogue. It takes place in this crazy futuristic society in which people repossess organs. So it's very, very bloody and gory. The songs lean kind of towards like metal. It's insane and terrible. But again, I get that there are people that sort of that for some reason speaks to them, that combination of weird things. Speaks to them, but I watched it and I thought the music was laughably bad. The lyrics are hilarious. The performances across the board, including Paul Sorvino, who we've seen be good in things, are shockingly terrible.
Do all the actors sing their own stuff? Like, is Paris Hilton actually? So it's not like rumors that okay.
No, and she's not the worst thing about the movie.
Surprisingly,
and I don't even know if I can blame the director because I think he sort of treated it the way it should have been treated. But then there's all these weird like cartoon sound effects and like boing, bah, like crashes and like inappropriate. He's definitely
slide
like
whistles.
I think you're almost always going to backfire when you like set out to make a cult movie. You know what I mean? Because it's just it's too obvious. It like smacks of, oh, this is manufactured, this is calculated, that you wanted to make a cult movie. But very, very bad, but often entertainingly so. So if you like terrible movies that have a lot of singing and or Paris Hilton in them, Repo the Genetic Opera. tonight we're talking about The Boondock Saints from 1999. We have talked about doing a podcast on The Boondock Saints for a long time. Because A, it's fun to make fun of movies, and B, I sort of want to draw the ire of the crazy cult of that movie and be called like a homo and stuff, that like they're really clever things that the Boondock Saints fans call people that don't like Boondock Saints. And so we've talked about doing it forever and we keep putting it off because, it requires watching the Boondock Saints.
Yeah.
And
oh,
for
absolutely.
You, did you watch both?
I did. I watched both The Boondock Saints and The Boondock Saints 2.
All Saints Day?
And I finished All Saints Day today because it took me 3 days. Like,
You're
one time
a great
I fell asleep.
Man.
I, Thank you. Yeah, like I've been waiting. Finally, I did finish Boondock Saints 2 today. I'll talk about that later because I don't want to ruin. It's lots of spoilers for Boondock Saints, but like, and I won't spoil Boondock Saints 2 in case you are on the verge of like, is my life worth living? And you are think that maybe it's not, and you might want to watch this movie to kind of reaffirm things. I'll save that, you know, for you to discover for yourself. But I did watch both of them, and I made a comment to you the other day because we talked about this, like you said, for months, if not over a year, to do this podcast for multiple reasons. And it always was kind of like, yeah, but well, we could do that. We can watch instead. We can watch Grindhouse, or instead we can watch Anchorman. It's like those are fun to watch, and even though they're not perfect movies, it's just they're enjoyable, and it goes by really fast. The Boondock Saints, I said to you, it's such work. For the first time, I feel like, why isn't this a paid site? Because I have earned my keep, if by nothing else, just by watching it. I haven't said anything about it yet, but just by like having watched it, having sat through it again, I think it's the second or third time I've seen it. And it's just, it was such, and by the way, if Boondock Saints 1 was work, Boondock Saints 2 is like slave labor, because it was so hard to get through. It's so boring. There's long, whatever, I'll get to that later.
I didn't see Boondock Saints 2, but I tried to read the Wikipedia summary. I could not make any sense of it at all. I was like, I have no idea what this is talking about. So the thing about the Boondock Saints, it's this crazy movie because it's like some people say it's the worst movie ever made, which it so isn't. But like there are, you know, people dismiss it because it's horrible. And the flip side of that is it has this rabid cult of people who love it. And prove that they love it by wearing hoodies that say like the Boondock Saints. And there's very little middle ground on the Boondock Saints either. Like, and I think the reason the middle ground has sort of evaporated, because I think people who don't like it are so turned off. And that's sort of what we were talking about with Midnight in Paris, or we've talked about this a bunch of times with Transformers or whatever. The people that love it, like, bully you to the point where you, a movie that you would have forgotten about or dismissed, you're like, no, you're wrong. That movie's horrible. And they sort of force you into this position of hating it.
Right. I still think there is a middle ground a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I think that middle ground is the people in another category possibly. Well, for example, I went to my sister's house last night for dinner. And I was talking to her, and my wife mentioned that we have to go home and watch a movie. And my niece was like, oh, what movie? And Shadia, my wife, says, oh, Boondock Saints. And even though I had finished Boondock Saints, it was Boondock Saints 2. My niece asks, I say Boondock Saints 2 or Boondock Saints, whatever. I'm sorry. And then my niece's friend, who is a very sweet, very nice girl, her first reaction to it is, oh, that's a good movie. I like that movie. And of course, my reaction, because I'm soulless and I have no interest in making friends with anyone anymore because I'm 32 years old. And I'm done, like, even talking to even my friends. Like, I don't even want to, like, I'm done. They're like, family, sorry, you'll just come to my funeral. That's cool. I say, no, you're wrong. It's a horrible movie. It's awful. And right away, I felt bad because she was like, oh, I haven't seen it in a long time, though. And I just remember liking it. I'm like, you know what? I can't, you know, attack you. Like, obviously, I think a lot of people have that reaction to it because it's a very, if nothing else, it's a movie that tries so desperately to be cool. And I think that for a lot of people who are maybe 13, 14, 15, who aren't exposed to better movies, even better movies that are like in the same era, you know, like obviously Troy Duffy is inspired by a lot of Tarantino is the most obvious example, but maybe they haven't seen Reservoir Dogs. And so this movie is the coolest movie they've seen because did you see those guns? Oh, my God, they shoot people and say a prayer. And I'm not even going to knock because, again, it's my niece and her really sweet friend, and they're not movie people. They go see the worst stuff. They were watching. In fact, we went outside to have dinner, and they were upstairs to watch Country Strong.
Nice.
And my niece was like, "It's good," and I'm like, "God, oh, I want to like rip her hair out." And it's not a good reaction for an uncle to have towards his niece. But I had it, and I'm willing to tell you folks about it. So, but that was kind of an interesting reaction that I'm like, really, like there still is that middle ground of people who aren't interested in movies. But they'll just see anything and think like nothing is really great for these people and nothing is really horrible. Everything is just like a 2 hour, you know, waste of time,
right?
Or just delay of time, I suppose.
Right. But like, as much as I want to talk about how shitty the Boondock Saints is, which is easy to do. I mean, you could just make a list. I don't know if that's as interesting as like trying to figure out what is it that people love about this movie? Like the people that love it, what are they responding to? Is it the racism? Is it the homophobia? Is it just people get shot in slow motion by these two guys who say prayers and that's cool? Like, are they that dim-witted? Sorry, people who like this movie, but like, to be impressed by that suggests to me that like you're a dummy. And maybe that's not fair. I'll stick to the movie and not the people that like it. But
you know what I think, though? But no, I want to talk about that a little bit. And I remember you and I back in high school and college, we would talk about the people out there who were the bullies, that they were fans of things. And they were so adamant in their fandom towards certain things, be it Dave Matthews Band, be it Tori Amos, be it South Park, before South Park became what it is today, which is very different from when South Park first premiered on Comedy Central. And that's a totally different discussion. But when South Park first premiered or first, you know, like got popular on Comedy Central, the people that really loved it and responded to it had no interest in the message or no interest in like the subtext or the really subtle passive aggressive humor. They were interested in like a boy gets killed every episode. Isn't that hilarious? And there's a talking piece of poo. Isn't that so funny? And likewise, there's people, there's cults of fans for anything. And I'm sure people can point the finger back at us because we're cults of fans for things that are maybe a bit more esoteric. I have no idea. But I know that these types of people were so – and I also believe, and maybe I'm going to shoot myself in both feet right now or alienate a whole different, you know, audience out there. But the people that like maybe were obsessed with the original South Park incarnation also like were the people that are just love Dave Matt. It's like the people that wear the co-ed naked – swimming shirts with the lists on the back and the big Johnson t-shirts. And again, this is for those of you under age 28, you probably have no idea what I'm talking about, but they were like their Birkenstocks and they're like right. Big Johnson t-shirts. And they were the biggest asshole douchebags. And if nothing else, like I don't, Dave Matthews is a fine musician. I don't like his music, but because you love it so much and you're such a fucking bully, like I hate his music and I hate you. And I hope your car flips on the way home and you never find love. That's how I feel about you. But that's just me. And it's, again, it's my reaction to those people that really love it. Now, right. Regarding Boondock Saints, I really think that it is I think you put your finger on it. It's a dim-witted, kind of very closed-minded field of like, they haven't been exposed to other things. They haven't seen other types of cinema. And I haven't, like, I'm in the F This Movie contributor world, I'm probably right in the middle in terms of like what I've seen. I mean, compared to JB and you, it's like you guys have seen so much whatever else. But I mean, like, I still have been exposed to enough where I realize, well, this is a piece of shit. And it, nothing else, it feels like a student film.
Yeah.
But what I think they respond to is this, every goddamn scene is structured with this cult of cool around it.
Right.
Like, they're going to wear leather jackets and flip open their Zippo lighters with their hand-rolled cigarettes,
right,
and their big guns with the silencers and their tattoos that say truth and justice on their hand, matching hands, and all these things about them that are like, oh my God, it's like a fucking poster that a 12-year-old would hang in his junior high locker before getting punched in the face by a teacher.
And then there's a shootout in slow motion in which they kill everyone and no harm comes to them ever, because that wouldn't be cool if they were at all vulnerable.
Well, there is harm, but the thing is, what's interesting though is they are shot or they are
they do wounded, but tied to the chair or whatever.
But what's cool about it is they take it. When they finally escape, they cauterize that wound with an iron because fuck the hospital. Because for whatever, like who knows? Because they are so cool and so badass. I mean, one of my favorite movies is Roadhouse. I'm kidding, but Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse, in the scene where he's getting stitched, he doesn't have anesthesia and he says, pain don't hurt. And I think that's Troy Duffy really took that to heart and realized I can make a career out of this, a career being two movies, by the way.
Yeah.
And talk about how pain doesn't hurt. And I'm going to be tied to a toilet or handcuffed to a toilet and lift that toilet up and jump off a balcony and jump on a Russian mobster's back. And it's all defying all logic. And it still meets the standards of the logic of cool.
Right.
Like it's everything about it is cool. Like, oh my God, he's in a dirty bathrobe. They sleep in this thing. They say their prayers and have their, God, I.
Everything about it is like a nightmare, especially again, for like the two of us who sort of really came of age, maybe, I guess, in the like the 90s when all this shit started because of Reservoir right. Dogs, and all of a sudden it was just, you know, the cinema of cool, and Boondock Saints represents sort of like the hollow pinnacle of that. And we both are Tarantino fans, and we say, no, it's not just about being cool. There's his movies are about something, and there's way more going on, and they're so much more sophisticated and mature than anything in Boondock Saints. But I swear that, like, Troy Duffy is one of these guys who claims, like, it's not a ripoff of Tarantino. Like, I don't even like Tarantino. I've never even seen a Tarantino movie, you know, because he doesn't want that accusation leveled at him. You know, we can't really talk about the Boondock Saints at all without mentioning the documentary Overnight, which right. for those of you listening who are unaware of it, I'm surprised because I feel like people are pretty aware of it by now. There's a documentary that came out called Overnight, made by two guys who happen to be sort of filming the whole process of Troy Duffy's pluck from obscurity and the deal he makes with Miramax, and then sort of the shooting of the movie, although the shooting of the movie is very much tacked on at the end, because for the most part it's about Troy Duffy like flaming out and being the single most obnoxious douchey asshole maybe ever on film.
And it's unbelievable. He is like playing the ultimate character of that right. douchebag asshole. And it's like, this has to be like, is he not self-aware? Has he never like heard a person talk before? Because
he's completely not self-aware. I mean, Boondock yeah. Saints is such an extension of like, oh, that's exactly the movie that this douchebag asshole makes.
Right.
And he's got sort of this cult of hangers-on around him, and some of them turn against him, but others don't.
Well, it's interesting with Overnight, too. At first, it was, you know, like the documentary, the making of, and his, like you said, his kind of like from rags to riches. Well, I think the tagline is from rags to riches to rags. But it was like he originally backed the movie and had these guys supported them and, yeah, film everything, come to every meeting, film every phone call. And these guys actually also filmed at the end of the Boondock Saints over the credits. There's like Man on the Street interviews, and the documentaries, filmmakers from Overnight, they're the ones who shot that stuff for the movie. So like they were kind of in bed with Troy Duffy for the, and then of course everything just hit the fan, and then they made this movie, and it came out, I think, 4 years after the Boondock Saints came out. And it's fascinating.
It's fascinating. And he's such an asshole, and he's such a villain, and you can't wait for him to fail. And that's ostensibly what Overnight is about him failing before his career really gets off the ground. And there's some satisfaction in that. But guess what? Like, that movie doesn't come out, really, unless Boondock Saints is sort of this cult hit. And now he's made a sequel. And Troy Duffy does not have a huge career. He's made two movies, and they both have the words Boondocks and Saints in them. But, like, he's big enough. His movie is a success because it's beloved by a group of people. And that bums me out because he's such an asshole that you just want him to fail
right.
completely. But he hasn't. He has found sort of a niche, you know?
I haven't seen Overnight in a while, but I remember being fascinated by, not so much in Troy Duffy, like everything you said about him is absolutely true. He's like from Connecticut or from Massachusetts or whatever, and is like plucked and writes the script. He actually moved to LA and wrote the script.
The Weinsteins like helped buy a bar, and they were, yeah, his band was going to play, write the soundtrack. They were called The Brood, and everything is like The Brood and the Syndicate, right? And yeah. Boondock Saints starts, and it's like a Brood / Syndicate production. I'm just like, well, you couldn't choose just one. Are you the Brood or are you the Syndicate? And then, yeah, they changed their name to the Boondock Saints. There's a band called the Boondock Saints.
Changed their name to the Boondock
Saints.
That's
so great.
What I find so fascinating is like, yeah, it's his kind of rise to fame or infamy, but also like it's I'm fascinated to watch the back channels of the movie industry and Miramax making these deals, like you mentioned, how they bought a bar and gave him like ownership of it to run his bar. It just was like, what? Like, why would you ever? And again, you could say all you want about like an untested, unproven director / screenwriter. I mean, the script, if they like the script, they like the script, no big deal. But like, you've got an untested director, and he's just like given $5 million to make The Boon, it's like, well,
it was the 90s, and everybody's looking, especially the Weinsteins, are looking for the next Tarantino or the next Robert Rodriguez. Absolutely. Like, plucked from obscurity, has this script that's all about just guns and being cool. There's like a story attached to it, you know, and it's like all a great package. And they had a ton of money to throw around in those days. So it's like, yeah, let's invest this.
Right.
And then they pretty quickly realized that that was a bad investment, and they pulled out.
Right. I have an issue with even the name, the Boondock Saints.
No,
I don't even know.
It makes perfect sense.
I don't even know like what Boondock.
But it sounds cool when you write it down. And then people can put it on their hoodies.
Right. It's got those consonants. It's got like some, it's an obscure word, you know, like there's the comic strip. There's also the song from the 50s or 60s. But like Boondocks means like the remote, far away, the nether, you know, like, it's like the Boondock Saints. And just like this, you're everything, you're predicating this movie. It's like the foundation of which is just insane to me. I don't know. Everything about it, I hate.
Nothing. Yeah. Everything. Nothing about this movie makes sense. Oh, no. He's been reduced to tears. Nothing about the movie makes any goddamn sense at all. Starting with the fact that, like, it's these two guys, Norman Reedus and Sean Patrick Flannery, both giving bad performances and doing terrible Irish accents.
Yeah.
And then there's a third guy who's funny, in quotes. And he, the actor that plays him is named David Della Rocco, right?
I think so, yeah.
But that's also, or Rocco, right. But that's also the character's name. So is he playing himself?
Yeah, I think, in fact, I read something that it was Troy Duffy's friend.
Right. So he's just playing himself. He's just.
And he brought his own mannerisms, his own energy to the
park.
Oh,
well, that's why it's so good and interesting. They become folk heroes because they.
Oh, you're talking about the plot of the Boondock Saints.
Like, so, well, not really the plot, but just like it immediately makes this leap where they're attacked by these Russian guys. They're chained up. They're beaten up. And then they have to fight to survive, and so they fight back, and they end up killing these Russian gangsters. And they immediately become folk heroes. I don't even understand that leap, much less like where you get to the point where they're like cult celebrities, they're saints, in quotes, where people love them because they're taking on the bad guys. Like, A, they're mostly just murderers. I don't understand at all why people are like, oh, we love these guys. How do they know about them? How do they know what's going on?
Right.
Why are the cops immediately impressed that they killed two Russian guys, like, basically to survive? Why, when Willem Dafoe is first talking about the crime scene, doesn't he talk about, like, what a gory mess it is, and then we actually see it, and it's like a guy gets a toilet dropped on his head, but he's fine. I mean, he falls and dies, but it's not like his head explodes like a melon or something. It's
right.
And then for Troy Duffy to claim that, like, no, I don't even know Tarantino or whatever. I mean, the entire movie has this incredibly repetitive structure, repetitive, and it seems to owe something to Tarantino, who does like to fuck around with chronology.
But it's the repetitive structure that is completely hollow. It's
exactly
all the
right. When Tarantino does it, it's kind of for a reason. Exactly.
It's absolutely for
a
reason.
Here's a guy who says, oh, so if I just move things around, that's good. That's creative. Right.
What I found the most – I was actually watching it the other day, and I kind of had this the same realization. I'm watching this, and I'm thinking, like, okay, so the structure of the movie, as you pointed out, is repetitive. It's like there's a fight. These guys, they plan to kill a mob boss, and then they kill the mob boss, and the people then investigate the scene. But it's not in that order.
Right.
The order is they plan to kill the mob boss. They have their plan in motion.
Fade
cut
to black.
Fade to black. Oh, my God. There's so many fades to black in this movie, too.
I know.
Fade to black, come up on the investigation of all the police officers and Smecker, the Willem Dafoe character, the FBI agent, investigating, and Willem Dafoe piecing together how the crime must have went down, and then cut to or fade to black or, you know, interlace with the actual crime happening. And I was thinking about
this. There's never a surprise. There's never like, oh, it happened in a way that we didn't anticipate.
That's exactly what I thought. I'm watching this and I'm like, okay, if every single time there's a fight, every time, except maybe a little bit, the last one is a little different, but still the last one is still set up in such a way, like we're going to plan this big attack on these people that we don't like, these bad guys. Cut to cops. All the bad guys are dead. There's absolutely no suspense. There's no worrying about the protagonists. If we are in fact to have some sort of feeling for these Boondock Saints, for these eponymous Boondocks. That's the second time I used eponymous. If we're supposed to like these guys, are we supposed to like, I'm worried and concerned that they're not going to live or are going to be harmed in this fight. But what ends up happening is it cuts to the crime scene. Everyone's dead. And then invariably they're planning their next thing. So it's like, well, I'm just going to have to like not even wait because I know everything. It's so mind-boggling to me that it makes sense in a way. Like it's the laziest kind of like, well, if Tarantino can do it the way he does it, I'll do it the way I'm going to do it. And it's going to be this repetitive thing. By the way, in Boondock Saints 2, his repetition is even worse.
Oh,
and there's
sweet.
A billion flashbacks to the Boondock, like the original stuff from Boondock Saints, except black and white. Oh my God, it's horrible.
Right. The structure is repetitive, but it never builds to anything. It's never like these things are never adding on to one another to reach like some end goal. It's basically like sequence one, sequence two, sequence three, sequence four, sequence five, end. But all of those sequences are the exact same.
Right. And they're all in the same too, in that there's no suspense. There's no worrying about anyone. It's all just like, you know exactly what's going to happen because you wait 2 seconds. Oh, it's done. It's over.
Right. I will say,
very clinical almost.
Troy Duffy is the worst kind of, like, he's one of the worst people in the world ever. Again, just based on Overnight. Like, if you watch that movie, he's the most miserable human being, like, on the planet. Obviously, there are worse people. There's murderers and terrorists and blah, blah, blah.
You're proposing that SEAL Team 6 take him out.
But he's so awful. And this movie is such an extension of his douchey awfulness. But I will say, I don't think he's utterly without talent.
No.
As a director, I think as a writer, he's a nightmare. But, like, he sort of knows how to compose some shots. He has no self-awareness because it's just like, hey, maybe not all of these need to be in slow motion with, like, metal music playing. And, again, it's just about jerking off to the coolness of it, even though the coolness is a lot of people being murdered. But they're bad people, so it's fine.
And it's all his friends, like, doing the best impersonation of a flailing fish being shot, like, a billion times in slow motion.
And there is one thing that I have always liked about it, and that is near the end of the film. I will say, there's one thing that I like about the movie.
Okay.
Spoilers, possibly, for the Boondock Saints coming up, and from here on out. Willem Dafoe plays the most over-the-top cop you've ever seen in any movie ever. His performance is so out there, and I read a little bit online. Some people think the movie is worth watching just to watch him act crazy in the way that, like, Nicolas Cage sometimes can be worth watching.
It is a very Cage-esque performance.
It is.
Right?
It's way, way out there. And where it goes in this sequence makes no sense to me. I mean, he's just, like, sweating and panting and crazy, and it makes no sense given what we're watching. But I like there's a sequence near the end where he, once again, is talking about what must have happened, and it inserts him sort of into the action.
Right.
And I like the way that that looks, where it'll pan across the two brothers shooting, and then Willem Dafoe is standing there right beside them shooting finger guns, and, like, he's reenacting it. And I think that looks neat. Again, it goes on too long, and Willem Dafoe takes it to this place. If he's really just reenacting this thing, unless it's taken him an hour, why is he so sweaty and tired? I have no
idea. Tie loosened.
He's so, like, worked up. He's like, he's doing this crazy hour-long Robin Williams improv. I don't know.
But, you know what? What's interesting about that, too, is you're right. It's kind of interesting to watch him kind of walk through the action. It's an interesting filmic device. It so quickly becomes cartoonish, though.
It so quickly becomes,
like, embarrassing. Like, if I was, like, if I made this movie and show, like, oh, I gotta cut this down, huh? Like, sorry, Mom, this is.
But it does suggest that Troy Duffy had, like, one interesting idea.
And also suggests that, like, guess what? He's gonna use that again in the sequel.
Oh, really?
Because it's not Willem Dafoe. It's a female played by
Julie Benz, who is a nightmare
Eunice,
also.
And she absolutely walks through this group of guys lined up, like, maybe six guys on both sides, and she walks down the channel of these guys shooting at each other across, and she just, like, their guns go up, like, right in front of her face, and she's just, like, walking. But it's all, like, it's the sexiest, like, her hair is being blown around. It's like, oh my God, you know Troy Duffy jerked off to her so hard, you know?
Whatever. I think Troy Duffy did not jerk off to Julie Benz. I think he jerked off to, like, the shot he created. Like, I think he only jerks off to his own stuff, like, himself. I don't think, like, he has interests.
Well, you know, it's funny you said before about how Troy Duffy is not without talent as a filmmaker. As a screenwriter, he is worthless.
Right.
What I find so interesting about that, and I agree, is that the script was the thing that got him his foot in the door. Like, this script was, he gave it to a friend of his who was, like, an assistant at New Line or something, and it just was bounced around and finally seen by the right. I mean, talk about serendipity. And we've talked about this before in terms of, like, how the process works for the undiscovered new talent like Kevin Smith And anyone who's like comes from nowhere, obviously people that are in the industry, be it like a J.J. Abrams or even a Paul Thomas Anderson who have some connections, it's a little different. But these people that is like it's the right person saw it at the right time or the right person read it. And all of a sudden they're propelled and rocketed. It's overnight success. Overnight. Hey, I just got that. But the script is such a piece of garbage. But I will say, like, to your point about his talent as a filmmaker, it is completely derivative. It is completely hollow and empty and devoid of any sort of like unique vision, aside from possibly the kernel of inspiration of the scene you just described.
Right.
But it still is fairly like interesting to watch, I guess. Like, if you're just like, gonna put it on mute and just watch a sequence, it's obviously ripped off from all of these other sources. You could tell, even though that Troy Duffy claims that his inspiration for the script was watching like a drug deal go down or like a drug dealer steal money off a corpse or something. It's like, no, your inspiration is other movies, because that's every goddamn mob movie or crime movie. It's like no one, I mean, obviously there's still crime. There's still a lot of, you know, bad stuff going on right now. But for the most part, the filmmakers, the privileged elite, or the even not privileged, I know Troy Duffy wasn't privileged, but like what he's doing is he's sitting in his room watching Tarantino movies or whatever, and he's taking elements and being like, well, no, I'm just going to make this my own. And it's writing, it's like third level removed crime movies now. Like Scorsese grew up in an Italian neighborhood. Like he knew these guys that he made movies about. But anyone like who's inspired by, then by Scorsese is just like, well, you grew up in you know, a suburb of LA and you love Goodfellas, and so you're making a mob movie about New York. It just, it's, and that's ostensibly Troy Duffy.
Right. Like you had said, it being sort of interesting to look at or whatever. It's not that it's necessarily interesting, but it's like not offensive. You watch like an old, like I say old, I mean a couple of years, like an Uwe Boll movie, who obviously is horrible.
Oh, horribly great. Oh, horrible.
And
horrible.
It's like, it's so incompetent that you're just like, this doesn't even look like anything. I don't know what this is. And Boondock Saints at least looks like a movie.
And that,
but
might
again,
be
to a fault, because like it looks too. Right. Well, sure. But like, but it looks like a movie to a fault, that it's so stylized and it's so derivative and it's all just slow motion and cool stuff that it resembles no kind of interesting reality or whatever. It's just something that he's regurgitating things that he's seen in other better movies.
Right. Well, it's also just to talk about, we mentioned before the cult of cool, how it's all like leather jackets, tattoos. They're all like ripped. There's showering, and it's just like slow motion shower sequence at one point.
What's the deal too with the, when they first like decide they're going to be Boondock Saints? there's a weird thing where they like have a dream and it's the middle of the night and they both wake up at the same time and the water's dripping on them. It's one of the gayest things I've ever seen.
Yeah. Oh yeah. By the way, that also is repeated in the sequel.
Oh, good.
The dream. But you know, spoiler.
Now I have to watch the sequel, cause it sounds like he just remade the first movie.
He did. But took all the wrong lessons and inserted a lot of boring stuff, a lot of old men talking and just like, what? This is so not interesting. Spoiler for Boondock Saints. Their friend, the Italian guy, the funny man, gets killed. Della Rocca, whatever his name is. He makes an appearance in the sequel in that dream.
Oh.
And it's them. It's so like it's this. He gives these pontificate, bloviating speeches on tops of city roofs and like how men build it and they tear it down and they build it back up and they build it better and stronger. And Troy Duffy is just, you know, he gets stoned out of his fucking mind and writes, and it's just like, he just is like a manic, right? It has to be that, right?
Right. I don't know. I mean, I think definitely in the case of the sequel, like he's writing with the knowledge in mind that like, I'm only writing this for that small group of people that worship Boondock Saints. Like
they're trying to like recapture that magic in terms of like,
right. So I have to put in all these things, right, that they'll approve of. So I basically am just going to redo the first movie.
I'm just so annoyed, too. Like I was mentioning, just all the cool stuff. It's so like even the guns that you, how they pull the guns out and then drop the guns.
Oh, yeah,
it's
yeah,
so
yeah, right.
Fucking dumb. But also kind of beyond that, like the characters, like they have a bartender friend who has Tourette's.
Who, and so by the way, is the dude from Fraggle Rock.
I don't even talk about Fraggle Rock, please.
There's a guy who like owned like a fix-it shop or like a hardware store.
Okay.
That was like the hole where the Fraggles lived was in his store, and he had a dog and the dog was always chasing the Fraggles. Anyway, that's the guy.
But he's got Tourette's, and he's like, So of course he gets, you know, throws in there like a fuck shit piss cunt, you know, like, and it's funny. It's done at these times where it's supposed to be funny. I mean, that's just one example of like every character they meet, like Willem Dafoe's character, a spoiler, is gay. And he dresses up in drag at one point. Again, he's definitely kind of becoming Nick Cage, or channeling that kind of, you know, crazy performance. What your face?
Because that scene where he dresses up in drag, like, is hilarious for all the wrong reasons. And, like, right. The hitman or the goon, you know, like, genuinely wants to fuck him. And it's like, it's Willem Dafoe in drag. Is this Bugs Bunny? Like, what the fuck? When Bugs Bunny dresses up like a woman, I buy it because it's a fucking cartoon.
You know, Yosemite Sam really wants that bunny pussy.
But you've just hit on, like, the point at which Boondock Saints goes from being, I think, derivative and mediocre and stupid to genuinely, I think, hateful and a movie that really pisses me off. And I forgot about this stuff until I watched it this most recent time. And that is that it's a really obnoxiously, like, hateful movie. And again, I think it's because, like, Troy Duffy and maybe his, like, circle of douchebag idiots think that it's funny to be, like, racist, or like the guy has Tourette's for no reason than because, like, haha, he's fucked up, he can't talk right, haha, I'm Troy Duffy, I can talk right, and this guy's a shithead. They punch for no good reason when they're first working at their meatpacking job or whatever. There's like this giant lesbian who is like giving them shit, so they punch her in the face because that's funny, because big lesbians deserve to be fucking punched in the face. And then Willem Dafoe is gay. Okay, wow, Troy Duffy, that's actually sort of progressive. Oh, wait, no. He turns to his lover in bed and calls him a fag because, yeah, haha, that's what gay people do. They call each other fag because Willem Dafoe. Then there's that scene where David Delahoye is being forced to tell a joke.
Right. To Ron Jeremy.
And is trying to not say the horrible racist word that is at the center of the joke. It begins right. With the letter N.
Right.
And Troy Duffy, the screenwriter, instead has a character insist that he say that word so that we get to hear that word over and over again. Because why not, Troy Duffy? You had a thing where you were kind of getting around it. No, no, no. We have to hear it.
And he's like, I'm sure he thinks like, well, I'm protected by three or two layers because it's the character it's that we kind of like. It's not me. It's the character we kind of like being forced to by the character we don't like. So it's like I'm even further removed from that.
Troy Duffy, but the whole thing you're the one forcing the character to force him to say that.
I could only imagine that, like, he has a script and his friends are sitting around. They're doing this, like, table read or something. This is my fantasy where Troy Duffy and his douchebag friends in Boston are doing this table read. And they're like, well, instead of, like, you've got this bartender character, you should do something. Give him Tourette's. And instead of, like, the FBI agent just being normal, make him gay. Or instead of a man that they disagree with in the meatpacking plant, make it a lesbian. It's just all these things. It's like, how many crazy things? Instead of this, make it a Martian.
But I feel like all of those things were like preceded by Troy Duffy or one of those guys saying like, wouldn't it be funny if?
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like, why are these things funny? Why are these things that she's a lesbian? It's funny. Or is it that she gets punched in the face? That's funny. I don't know. On one level, it's just a derivative, hacky piece of shit. But on another level, it's a genuine, it's like, look into his worldview. And it's a really shitty, racist, homophobic worldview that he has. And I mean, that's not a surprise. Again, having seen Overnight, it's like, well, of course he would be all those things. He's the worst. But this movie is too. And I feel like even all those people who love it and just like that they say a prayer and then shoot a person, like, that's cool. Look at my sweatshirt. Right. Those things a pass.
What I find interesting too is that, and I think you mentioned this earlier, or you talked about it briefly, is that this movie actually, not this movie at all, not the Boondock Saints, but the theme in the Boondock Saints, one of the themes is, you know, vigilante justice. You've got these two guys.
It's pro-vigilante justice.
It's absolutely pro-vigilante justice. You've got these two guys who are so cool that guys want to be and chicks want to be with. No, you've got these two guys. They're so cool. I think that's a fairly interesting topic. You know, you've got vigilante justice. Is it right? Is it justified? Is it not right? Of course, the movie has no interest in that, has absolutely zero interest in exploring those themes.
No.
Because it's way cooler just to show people murdered in slow motion.
Right.
It's almost, I'll make a comparison right now. I know we've talked briefly before about A Few Good Men. I like that movie a lot. I really like Aaron Sorkin, and I like military movies, and I find it, it's a very interesting.
Well, you like Demi Moore with short hair. Like,
I
that's
do.
Kind
I
of
do.
Your
I like,
thing.
I love G.I. Jane. Hello. But I like courtroom procedurals. I like all those types of things. Military, courtroom, Aaron Sorkin. It's just a great mix. In the movie at the end, there's a great, obviously, everyone knows it. It's the sequence between Tom Cruise and Jack Nicholson where he gets Jack Nicholson to admit to something horrible.
He said, you can't handle my truth, right? Is that what you're talking
I think
about?
That's okay. my truthiness.
Oh, that's what it was. I'm sorry. It's been a while since I've seen it.
And then there's a kind of an interesting dialogue that Jack Nicholson says where he, you know, like you think you've done the right thing right now, but you've weakened a country because my action towards that led to the death of a private, while horrible to you, probably saved lives. I'm actually quoting the movie verbatim right now. Probably saved lives.
Say it as Nicholson.
And my existence to you. No, he just talks about how the wrong that was committed on this one soldier it's bad, and we weep for the body and the soul of Santiago, but it's necessary. It's almost like that. What's that one short story? The Omelas. I think they talk about like if one kid's in a room who suffers, but a million people can live free and be happy. What's the cost? I think those are interesting themes. It's funny in A Few Good Men though, because it's like, wow, that is a great question. And of course, Rob Reiner has no interest in exploring that really. It's Aaron Sorkin kind of shoehorns that in, or maybe they, I don't know what the whole process in that was, but you kind of pointed out that like, no, there's no interest in that because Tom Cruise is the winner. Jack Nicholson's is the douchebag, dirtbag loser, and he's wrong and Tom Cruise is right. And the movie ends with Tom Cruise being victorious and triumphant in the courtroom, and it's the end in cursive, and it's very old fashioned in a Capra-esque way. And it, likewise, I think this movie at the very end, those Vox Populi, the man on the street interviews where they ask like, are the saints good or are they bad? And it's a very 50-50. Like some people are like, no, I think they're good. I think that there's criminals out there. They need to be killed. So God bless them. And then some person's like, no, I think it's, you know, you can't have people taking justice in their own hands. I'm like, what a fucking safety.
Yeah, right,
you know, like
right.
Just such a sleazy, like the whole right. For fucking two. It's such a long movie too. It's 117 minutes, I think. For the entire duration of the movie, it is so fucking cool to watch these cool guys kill people in cold blood and say their douchebag prayer. And you know, are so just badass about it. And then at the end, you're going to see like, well, don't judge us too harshly. If you disagree with the themes, it's like, cause some people also don't, you know, these bad actors that I'm interviewing on video.
And I would also contend that actually that sequence at the end isn't even necessarily about addressing those themes, even as a safety, that it's only there to again, reinforce the idea that like these guys are well known, like everyone right. knows who the Boondock Saints are. Look at all these random people on the street who have opinions on them.
Oh my God.
I forgot too, when I was listing off all the hateful things about the movie, that it also hates women, not just lesbians, but women in general, because there's essentially only three female characters in the movie. The giant lesbian who gets punched in the face, David Della Rocco's sister, girlfriend, I don't know, who's like a druggie who he just right. screams like, you're a bitch, you're worthless.
He kills her cat.
Right. He just screams horrible, hateful things at her because this is how Troy Duffy feels about women. And then a stripper who passes out so that another character yeah. can grab her boob while she's unconscious. So that's the treatment of women in the Boondock Saints. But a lot of girls love this movie, so apparently they are unfazed. Do. Yeah, because the guys are dreamy, don't you see? Those two guys are cute while they pray and kill.
It's interesting too. In the sequel, instead of Willem Dafoe, it's Julie Benz, and she is the female,
which is a considerable step down acting wise.
A female protagonist hero. She's got this exact same kind of MO as Willem Dafoe. Like she knows way like too much about crime scenes and stuff. And she's so cool. And she knows everything. She's like all knowing. And her introduction, by the way, is so fucking funny because it's these three detectives from Boston. One of them's Greenlee, I think, who's like the horny idiot who has no business being a police officer.
Were those guys pulled off the street? The cops that are playing like the extras. I've never seen. I mean, that's some bad acting. Anyway, sorry.
Oh, absolutely. So she exits the car, and it's this reveal. It's again, it's taken from every fucking movie ever, where she's wearing these stiletto high heels.
What?
These black patent leather stiletto high heels with like a red bottom. The stockings, you know, the nylons with the line up the back, they're like really sexy nylons.
Sure.
And it's just her walking towards the crime scene. And then it's from behind kind of tracking her as she walks towards the crime. And all these guys with their mouths open. And this is just my take on it. When it finally cuts to her face, Julie Benz is a fine looking woman. In this movie, she is not. I don't know what they did to her. Like, there's the makeup's horrible. Her hair is horrible. When it finally cuts to her, I was like, I think I made a verbal like, ee, like, ooh.
That was not worth the time it took.
Right. So maybe Troy Duffy's earning back or winning back the women by having this strong woman, you know.
Being presented in purely sexual terms.
Do you have any interest in seeing Boondock Saints 2?
As a curiosity, I kind of do, but...
Do you want me to ruin anything or
spoilers for Boondock Saints 2 coming? Well, I feel like anybody who is listening to this, okay, has either continued listening because they also hate the Boondock Saints, or they never are going to see it, so they're fine with hearing us shit on it, or they're just listening to get more ideas for things, mean things they can say to us, in which case they've already seen both movies. So, spoilers for Boondock Saints 2 coming up.
There's not a lot of names in, well, there's obviously not a lot of names in either movie. In the first movie, I think the biggest name is Willem Dafoe and Billy Connolly, kind of, right?
He's a big name overseas, more so than here, but...
In my classroom in the Bronx or in Brooklyn, he was...
Only after Howard Hessman leaves.
I cannot get around the fact that this guy, Il Duce, the father of the two, you know, Irish hitmen... The heroes of the movie is the fucking Scottish teacher, Scottish by the way, not Irish, from Head of the Class.
Yeah,
and it's just like, oh, whatever. So in the second one, one of the biggest names aside from Norman Reedus and Sean whatever Flannery is Judd Nelson,
right,
who has a tiny part. He's like an underboss. He's like the Ron Jeremy.
Okay.
In the first one, in the second one. And as I was watching this, Shadi was like, oh, is Willem Dafoe in this one? And I'm like, no, because there's a scene where Julie Benz's character goes to visit a grave that says Smekler, and she puts a flower on the Smekler grave. But she's like Smekler's, you know, prodigy.
By the way, his name is Smekler. He handpicked a prodigy? I don't understand.
That's because you
don't
understand.
This is what cops do. I'm sorry. Yeah, exactly. I don't know how cops work.
Well, the big spoiler is, you know, obviously Julie Benz kind of does the same thing as Smekler, gets way too involved, gets too close, supports the Boondocks, the Saints' mission. And so she has to leave the FBI because she's compromised or they, you know, she's obviously complicit in, you know, murder. Who is there to take her away to her new life but Smekler? Willem Dafoe is a little cameo.
He's not dead?
Just on a pier one day, he is like... Obviously, just reading off a cue card. It is really hilarious. She has.
That was nice of him to agree to work a day on that movie, though.
What
like,
does he have going on? You know,
I don't know. He still acts a lot. He was in Spider-Man, for crying out loud.
I know, but
he
still,
saw like, the first movie. He knows how it turned out.
You know,
like,
you're swept up. If you're Willem Dafoe, you're definitely swept up in like, hey, it was a low budget movie I made. People really seem to love it. I'm not going to judge that. Like, I don't care. Like, he's famous in a lot of circles that he wouldn't be famous in.
I guess.
I don't think people that are seeing Boondock Saints are watching the Nosferatu movie where he's, you know, the real
Shadow of the Vampire.
Dracula, right.
Yeah.
But that was pretty surprising, too. And then, by the way, the whole second movie focuses on the father, Il Duce, and his backstory.
Good.
So in, like,
just like Godfather 2.
In New York City in like the 40s and how he became what he became.
So it really is Godfather 2.
It is unfucking believable. By the way, another thing too, and this is, you could watch this if you like Netflix this or something. In the first 5 minutes, you realize that the Saints are in Ireland because they're on the lam from their murders, I assume, in Boston. They're on horses and they both like open their Zippos at the same time. They're smoking, but their beards and their hair, because they've been on the run for so long. I mean, I kid you not. It is like
they do like the full Castaway. Like,
it is on. I mean, their mustaches, it's like a sweeping Fu Manchu mustache to a huge bushy beard, a big bushy beard and giant hair. And it's just like everything about it is just like, I can't even.
That's,
I mean,
how you communicate that. Like, they're in hiding. They don't shave.
Sometimes I wish our podcast was like MST, what is it?
Mystery Science Theater 3000? MST3K.
Yeah, like where we can literally just sit there and be like, what the fuck? Without having you describe this to you, just be like, oh my God, can you believe what we're all seeing at the same time? Because for me to come back right now and tell you like what I saw is absolutely absurd. Another small thing I have issue with is I have a lot of Irish friends. and I know you're Irish, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but first and foremost, I'm American, and I even though I'm German, I'm American first. I've never really thought like the Germans are so cool. I know a lot of Italians think the Italians are. I mean, especially with The Godfather.
Within every nationality, I think there's a sect that thinks like I'm the coolest because I'm this. You know?
Right. But if you're Irish, you think you're. But there's a thing with certain Irish people I know that it's like you're Irish. It's like you're. That's great. That's happy. But it's like, what is so different about being Irish than just being American or just being British?
Right.
You know, oh, you speak Gaelic or Celtic or like whatever. Like there's such a cult of cool around the Irish with certain people again. And this obviously way subscribes to that because they go to like the St. Patrick Cathedral. They're like doing their prayers and it's all very Irish. They love to drink their Guinness. And I'm just like, oh, like you are just basically from Cleveland. I mean, like you're not – it's –
Right. Why do they say the prayers? Obviously, it's because Troy Duffy, the screenwriter, thinks that's cool. But is there any evidence in any aspect of their lives that they are religious people, aside from the fact that they say prayers before murdering people?
No, I think that it's a pure plot device because they say their prayer because, A, it's cool, as you said. It's fucking
religion rat. Doesn't seem to inform any aspect of their lives.
And when the Il Duce who comes out of prison to, you know, kill those guys, but later finds them saying the prayer before they're going to off another person.
The special prayer that only they said.
They're a family. It's our father's prayer and his father's father's prayer. So Il Duce can see that and be like, my boys, why do you be in a tiny little? That's the reason. No, there's absolutely. And there's a couple. In the second movie, there's a lot more of the father, the priest, because the first murder in the second movie is the murder of a priest. And it's set up to look like the boys did, the saints did it.
So why would they kill a priest?
Right, they only kill bad people.
Yeah.
So they have to come out of hiding, which was like just, you know, bait, obviously, to get them to come out and to open up a whole new can of worms. A can of worms? I think that's the expression, can of worms.
Even the idea of having like the mob be all stereotypical like Italians, like cartoon Italians, is so ignorant. Like, make them Irish too. That doesn't make it a better movie, but it just makes it less of a terrible movie, if that makes sense.
You've got the Russian mob.
Oh, right. I forgot about the Russian mobs.
Meet the Irish, not like the mob. They're not the mob, but like the Irish kind of like they're the ones on the street. They're the ones who know how to fight, and they speak 10 languages too.
Right. Oh, right. I forgot about that scene.
In the second one too, you've got, instead of the Italian, their funny man friend, they have a Mexican friend. To your point, they just call him a dirty spick throughout the entire movie.
Oh.
Well, he's their best friend.
Who they hadn't, like. I don't think in the first movie they had insulted Hispanics or Latinos. So it makes sense that he has to do a second movie because he realizes, oh my gosh, I left out all my horribly offensive language about Mexicans. So
absolutely.
Let's greenlight a sequel.
So the sequel is horrible. It's a piece of garbage. I hate it. It's boring. It does everything the first movie does, except slower, and then it also has a lot of old people, like Il Duce is talking to his Italian friend who set him up in this long scene at the end before there's a big firefight, but we don't even firefight before we don't even know what's going on. I can't wait for the Boondock Saints 3 is my point.
I wonder if there's going to be one. I mean, again, if he can raise the financing, he can build a whole career off of just making Boondock Saints movies, because for some reason there are people that love these movies. And again, I support anyone that likes movies or that loves movies or feels very passionate about like a movie. There are certainly movies that I'm passionate about that other people may not understand. But I also have to admit, and maybe this is just my bad, that I immediately lose respect for someone who claims to love the Boondock Saints.
Yeah.
When I was in grad school, is really when I first started noticing this phenomenon. There's this list, and we've referred to it before on If This Movie and just in personal conversations. The list of like the film student douchebag, the movies that he loves. And it came about because in grad school, there was an undergrad who was trying to impress a girl that I worked with. And so he made her this list of like, these are the movies that made me want to become a filmmaker. Meanwhile, it's just every movie. It's The Godfather and A Clockwork Orange. So the list is always the same, and it's got like a couple David Finchers and like a couple Tarantinos and usually only A Clockwork Orange. That's like the only Kubrick movie that makes it on. Donnie Darko often shows up there. Requiem for a Dream, like Darren Aronofsky, definitely makes an appearance on the list. And then a lot of times, like, Boondock Saints ends up on the list. And it's like, I don't understand. Even if I don't agree with the fact that these are the only movies you love, I can understand why a person would love them. But Boondock Saints, it's like that John Mulaney joke about, like, I love The Godfather and Scarface or something. It's like, that's like saying you love lobster and Skittles. Like, you can't love all these movies and the Boondock Saints.
Right.
And so for years we've kind of joked about it, like, I love film, I love the Boondock Saints. Like, no, 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 you don't. You don't. Take that back. And then maybe last season, I felt so vindicated because it became a thing, like, on The Office, where they had, like, a talking head with a kid who said, like, I love film. My two favorite movies are Citizen Kane and the Boondock Saints or something. And I was it's a national thing that people are picking up on, like, these weird hypocrites with horrible taste.
What's so funny about that, though, and I it's funny because I was doing some research before this podcast about the Boondock Saints and all the kind of references, like how it's become part of culture. You know, the Boondock Saints, the movie, has become part of our culture. And what's so interesting is, like, everything you said is true about it's kind of filtered its way into idiots' lists and vocabularies. And they love Citizen Kane, which they probably have not honestly seen, and the Boondock Saints, which they've seen probably 10 times. And a couple instances, though, I noticed that where it was brought up, it was almost like the Boondock Saints, it's almost in such a way that, say, like, the Boondock Saints is so popular that it even made an appearance on The Office. Can you believe it? And I'm thinking, like, no, no, no. You're taking the wrong lessons.
Right.
Like,
it was the butt of the joke. Right.
The character who says it is the biggest idiot. Like, you would never right. want to spend 2 seconds alone with this kid because he would, like, make right. you dumber for talking to him.
I don't know. People really seem to love this Hitler. I mean, they're talking about him.
Right.
Again, that's not fair. The Boondock Saints isn't Hitler. But just because somebody's talking about something doesn't mean that it's popular or well-liked.
Right. You can't just say words.
And what I'm saying is the Boondock Saints is like Hitler. No, I'm not saying that. If you like the Boondock Saints, great, good job. That's going to happen in Boondock Saints 3 because Troy Duffy realized he has not yet offended the Jews.
It's great. Well, also there's the blacks too. Aside from the N-word in the first one, I guess that was pretty. But, and maybe that's enough because
I felt like that was enough.
Person, right.
No. His world is very white.
Right. Absolutely. Very Irish.
Yeah. I felt like that joke in the first movie was enough. So if you like the Boondock Saints, great job. I'm glad that you found a movie that you love. But I also feel like I don't totally understand how you listen to this particular podcast because it seems like we have very different sensibilities. Like,
right.
I've definitely found podcasts before where I'm like, these people don't say anything I agree with. And I tend to not listen to those. Unless they're saying things that enlighten me or open my eyes. And maybe we've done that tonight with the Boondock Saints. Maybe we've convinced someone that it's a terrible movie. I certainly hope so. I don't know.
I hope everyone who's listening also thinks it's a terrible movie. I'm sorry, I'm talking far away from the microphone.
Sorry.
It's a terrible movie. And if you're listening, you kind of, like, passively agree with us. I think there's not even you can't even debate the fact that it's a terrible movie. Like, by your silence right now, listener right now, I can't hear you, so I'm assuming you agree with us. So there you go.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Doug, take us out with a prayer.
There was a firefight!